Hello and welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. I'm Kathy Love. I started life as an OT, had an amazing, crazy private practice, which I sold. And what I do now is help allied health business owners create a business that serves them, the time, the money, the joy that they absolutely deserve. And this is where my idea for the podcast started. What I want to do is to capture how hard allied health business owners in Australia work to achieve their dreams, to support their teams, to create amazing outcomes for their clients. So sit back, beverage of choice, drive safely, walk carefully, however you're listening in, and I hope you absolutely enjoy. At the risk of singing the Simpsons tune, which we'll speak about in a minute, our guest today is Sarah Collison, the director of Verve OT in Sydney. Welcome.
Thank you. It's so good to be here.
Yeah, I'm really keen to hear more about the backstory of how you kind of got into the driver's seat for Verve. But interestingly, how do you usually introduce yourself?
So I usually introduce myself as I'm Sarah. I'm the director or the owner of Verve OT. And some of you might know me from the Endo Providers group on Facebook. So,
and hence the bit that about some of you might know me. So, yeah, a lot of people know you, Sarah.
Yes, it's quite weird. I was just talking to an OT about half an hour ago, actually, and we were talking about a client, and she said, oh, you know, I've been to some of your training, and I was like, oh, okay. She's like, I kind of feel like I know you, and I was like, oh, all right then. So all good things, I hope.
Yeah, but does that happen to you more and more?
It does. It does happen more and more. So I do tend to get emails or Facebook messages, but when I went down to Melbourne recently for the OT Exchange conference, that was probably the biggest one where I had a couple of people come over to ask to have their photo taken with me, which is very kind of, oh, this is interesting, which I was very happy to do. But I also, you know, distinctly remember walking down through the, you know, exhibits and people staring and turning and looking at me and thinking, oh, my God, have I got something in my face? And then at one stand there was a few people staring at me and I kind of looked over and they're like, oh, is it you? Are you Sarah? And I'm like, yes. And they're like, oh, you know, we're in your Facebook group and we love everything you do. And I was like, oh, okay. And so we went over and had a really lovely chat. So, yeah, I do get recognised a bit more in OT circles, not just out in general public, but certainly in OT.
Are you comfy with it?
I am, actually. I like it. I like it. I like that I'm doing something that obviously is recognised by others within the profession and it's valued. I love that. And if talking about the backstory, it's all come about from needing to be valued and to feel that a contribution is being made. So, yeah, I do love it.
So was it November 2018 that you had a bit of a rush of blood to the head and a strong drink and signed up for the crazy adventure of owning your own businesses?
Yes, yes. There are actually
quite a
number of catalysts that led up to that.
Oh, tell us about them.
Yeah, so I was working for a big organisation, a hospital provider, if you like, and I was really happy with it. I loved the job. I loved the day-to-day. But I just felt like I could do so much more if I was out on my own. I felt like I could do so much more if I was given an opportunity. And there were a couple of things that had happened. You know, I was doing a lot of NDIS work. I was setting up a lot of NDIS stuff and they were looking at setting that NDIS work elsewhere within the organization. And they actually basically handpicked someone else to do it for them. And I can recall having a conversation and picking up the phone and saying, I don't understand why you would do that. Like, I'm sitting here. I've been engrossed in the NDIS world for the last 6 months. I have all this knowledge. And the guy I spoke to just said to me, oh, well, you know, such and such, he's my right-hand guy, and that's kind of how it works. And I thought, oh, that doesn't sit with my values. So I'm not sure that I want to be here anymore. And I just kind of had to think about, well, you know, what's important to me and what are my values and where does that lie in this NDIS space that I've kind of found myself, you know, engrossed in. And that's where I just thought, you know, if I was actually out on my own, I would have full control over that.
Yeah.
I could decide what that's going to look like and who would do it and how I would do it and what service would I provide and how would that be done. And I just kind of thought, yeah, now's the time. So to make that leap.
And what sort of leap was it? How did it start?
Well, I mean, that was probably the first catalyst of just going, right, well, I need to set up a business. And I had actually set up a business before. I think that was the funniest part, was that Verve OT used to be called Verve Health Solutions. About 3 years prior to that, I decided to set up my own OC rehab company. I'd come from an OC rehab background. Mm-hmm. I went through the entire OC rehab accreditation process. And then just personal life circumstances, I ended up really not having the time to be able to do it. I was offered a full-time job doing something else, which I went into and tried to do stuff on the side, but it just didn't work out. And then I lost my passion for OC rehab as well. I think the business and setting it up had come about from a place of wanting to do something different. And at the time, OC rehab was what I knew, but I don't think it was going to be a lasting thing for me. And certainly the fact that I chose the full-time position over then pursuing that was the sign that it wasn't. Yep. So
false start, just a false start.
Right. Yeah. So, And setting up businesses is not, you know, not a new thing for me. I've got lots of side hustles as well.
Serial entrepreneur here.
That's right. So I knew NDIS at this point, and so I thought, well, okay, I know NDIS really well. I'm passionate about it. I'm really enjoying it. I can see the potential that it has, not just as a business owner or an OT, but the potential that it has for people with disability to really make a difference. And I want to be part of that. And so the first step was actually getting my registration. So I went through the process of becoming a registered provider. And it was
right from the get-go. What was your commitment around that?
I think it was that I knew becoming a registered provider meant that I had to have policies and procedures.
Yeah.
I had to have good governance in place. I had to have everything lined up in a row. And I just thought, that's the way I want to start. I want to start how I want to finish. And I don't ever want to turn a client away on the basis of their plan management status. Like I want to be able to say to referrers, it doesn't matter if they're agency, self or plan managed, you can come to me and I will see them. So for me, I saw that as an investment. And at the time, you know, the cost to become a registered provider was about $1,000, but I pay more in my OTA registration or membership for a 3-year period than it cost me to be registered at the time with NDIS. So for me, I saw it as a bit of a no-brainer and starting out. And I actually received notification of my registration approval the day before I was submitting my resignation letter. So it
was freaky timing.
It was a sign of right. And it felt really good. So so I was really happy about that. And so I set out I had my first referral, which was I look at it now and think, my goodness, it probably could have sent me down the drain. But it was a massive complex home mods referral. It was
that's your wheelhouse now, but
it is now. I build on that. I kind of what I want to refresh on. I'm going to do all the courses. I've been to the training with Liz Ainsworth. I've been to the training with Sandy Lightfoot Collins. I bought the textbook. Like I'd done everything, and I
had
took
the badge.
And I was like, wow, okay, I've really got to learn the home mods process now. Like I have to understand this. And so I just started digging, and I discovered these operational guidelines and NDIS rules and all of this stuff that really wasn't easy to find on the NDIS website, but really helped me to go, well, this is what the NDIS is looking for here. This is the answers that I've got to give them to the questions they're raising. And that approval came back 6 months later, no questions asked, $150,000 home mod.
How many years ago was this?
This was, well, it was almost 4 years ago now.
Yeah, 20, so, yeah.
That was my first home mods approval was $150,000 home mod.
Green light. You're welcome.
It was another sign. So, it was a good start. So
you started on your own and you're still a mobile service. We'll talk about that in a tick. That first year, when did you bring in team? How did you develop systems? How did
It was crazy. So, I mean, in terms of developing systems, I'd worked in the OC rehab space before. I knew about billable time, productivity, how to be efficient. And I knew from the get-go I needed a case management system. Again, another no-brainer. I often see people post in Facebook groups and say, oh, you know, I can't afford the cost of it. And I'm like, you can.
Oh, my gosh, you can't afford not to.
It will save you so much time in invoicing and bill, like everything. So right from
compliance.
Absolutely, yeah. I have my case management system in place. I have that all set up ready to go. I already have my kind of templates that I had created, well, because I'd created them for the organization I was with previously. So that creating things like the service agreements and that I'd already been able to do. So that was a fairly easy one. But certainly managing the referrals at the beginning was really hard because as a sole trader, you want to say yes, but sometimes you have to say no. And I did learn very quickly about the value of saying no. And I got this particular referral for a client. It had come to me as a physical referral. They needed a falls alarm for this client. But when I went out to see her, I quickly discovered it was actually really needed a mental health OT. So the reason they wanted the alarm was to provide her with some reassurance because she kept calling the ambulance service 50 times a day. She kept calling the coordinator 50 times a day. And they thought a falls alarm would kind of give her some reassurance. And I was like, this is not what this is going to achieve. Like, you need a mental health OT. I said, I'm not a mental health OT, but I'm going to help you find one. And I made a few calls. I found a mental health OT, connected that to the support coordinator. And the next day, the support coordinator sent me three new referrals, and each referral was absolutely appropriate. And she rang me and she said, I've never had someone actually take the time to, first of all, say, this is outside of my scope and I'm not the best person, but let me help find someone who is. But number two, kind of take the time to actually help guide me as well, because as support coordinators, that was still very new 4 years ago. Those roles didn't exist in the trial phase. And so that referrer still sends referrals to me now. Mm-hmm. We work with all the clients at their day program, which is what the support coordination agency is linked with. And it absolutely established this working relationship that has been positive from the get-go. Said no.
Over what sort of time frame did team start to come in?
So I think we took the first team member that came on was actually an OT assistant or admin. That was actually the first person that came on board. Because again, as a sole trader, you get very bogged down with invoicing and referrals and the data entry. And I was like,
not fun.
I could be billing if I wasn't doing this. And so the first person that came on board was actually my admin, and Sue is still with me now.
Oh.
Yeah, Sue was my, when I was a second year OT, she was my student that I supervised. And so Sue and I have kept in contact all of that time. We're reconnected when we both lived overseas. I think I've hired her once before that as well. She's just always been there. She's amazing. Yeah. But then certainly I recognised I couldn't keep managing this caseload. So obviously I was getting all these referrals, which was lovely because I was getting outcomes. So, you know, you get a great outcome, you get another referral because people know that you're going to deliver on what you've said you're going to deliver. But I couldn't handle all the referrals that were coming in. But there were also referrals coming in where they were outside of my scope. I didn't feel comfortable taking them. And not because I thought I'd make a mistake. Yes, that's one aspect. But I want to get the best outcome for the client. And if I take on a referral and I don't get that outcome, that doesn't do great things for my reputation. So I basically kind of went out and started talking to OTs that I knew. I was previously an OT department manager, so I had some...
You knew OTs?
I knew OTs. And I just said, do you want to come try and work for me? Like, do you want to come and come aboard like this? And so I started off with subcontractors. So flexibility for myself as not knowing how much work I would have and flexibility for them as well, not knowing if this was the type of work that they would want to do. And it just really grew from there and made the decision very early on that we get the best outcomes OTs when we're doing the things that we're good at. And there are some great generalist OTs out there, particularly in regional and remote areas, because they have to be. There's not enough OTs. But I think in the metro areas, we have an opportunity to really specialise and hone in on those things that we are passionate about. And if we're only kind of doing one thing, we get really good at it. And so complex home mods now, I get $250,000, $300,000 approvals without being asked any questions, you know, because that's all I do now as a clinical
coach is honed
mods. Yeah. So as each new OT came on board, the conversation was, well, what are you passionate about? What do you love doing? What do you get the most joy from? What are the areas that you really want to kind of specialise in? And then every OT's, I guess, caseload has then been built around that. So we have OTs that just do mental health, that just do sensory, others that just do functional assessments or SIL and SDA, some that just do AT and seating. and it works really well. And the client at the end of the day gets the best outcome.
Yeah. Yep. So how many in your team right now?
Well, I think...
Let's count the fingers and toes.
I've got this all stuff here that I've been working on. So I've got about, there's about 30 total in the team. Yep. And that's a mix now of obviously admin and support staff, of subcontractors and of permanent employees. So we do have permanent employees as well.
Yeah. Did you think it would look like this 4 years ago?
No. At the time, I was just happy that I had enough work for myself. That was all I thought it would be. But I guess looking back now, I'm glad that I started off how I wanted to finish. Like I'm glad that I started off with the case management system, with the registration. The only thing I wish I had done was maybe...
I was going to ask if you, is there anything you would have done differently?
Because I obviously set up as a sole trader to start
with. Oh, nightmare.
And when I had to transition to company, I had to go through NJS registration again.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of a pain. But I waited until this was around the time where when they first released registration, if you were a company, even if you were providing therapy supports, you still had to go through the certification pathway. So they then overruled that about 12 months later. So it was a lot easier the second time round just to go through verification again.
Yeah.
But it was still an extra cost and, you know, another admin kind of audit process to have to go through.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing. If I had my time again, I would have set up as a company for but everything else has been a dream. So
now a team of around 30. Why have you decided to be OT only?
I believe that I'm really good as an OT, and that's where my skill set and my strengths are. And my brain also only has so much that it can take in any kind of given work day.
Have you only got an OT brain? Is that it?
No, I haven't. I have to be fair to myself. I've managed lots of other disciplines.
Yeah.
I used to be operations manager at lots of OC rehab providers. I had EPs, physios, OTs, speeches. When I was at the hospital that I was at, I was at one point the OT speech and diet department manager. So I actually don't have any problem with managing other disciplines or working with them, but I just feel that there's an opportunity to just do OT and do it really well.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where that comes from, is that there's lots of great companies out there that diversify and do all of those different services and can be that one-stop shop, and that's great. But I just feel that for me and the values that I've got, it's about saying we do OT, we do it really well, and we get the great outcomes because it's the only thing we focus on.
Yeah. So running the OT business, you know, that's all ticking along beautifully. The NDIS piece, tell us a little bit about the Facebook group, and then we'll talk about the training you do, because, you know, you fit a lot into your 24/7.
Yes.
So why the Facebook group? What's that community about?
So I kind of stumbled onto it by chance, actually. The Facebook group was already in existence before I came a member of it. So the history of it was that it was created by some OTs up in the Hunter, Newcastle region, when the NDIS was in trial phase. And it was created to provide an opportunity to network and to kind of liaise and talk with each other. And it's really funny because when I was working for a an NDIS provider back in those days, I actually was business development manager, and I was up in the Hunter Newcastle area often doing NDIS work. And I remember saying to an OT there, I was like, you know what, you OTs up here, you're so different from Sydney OTs. There's no way when this rolls out across Sydney, like all the metropolitan areas, that we'll have this kind of networking and friendly peer support. There's no way that will happen. And the Facebook group is proof that I was completely wrong, because it absolutely has become this online platform of support to all NDIS OTs, not just in your Newcastle, but right across the country. And so I took it over, I'd say probably 4.5 years or so ago now. And it only came by chance that the admin at the time of the group was doing other things or had moved on to another role and said, does anyone want to do this? And, of course, I put my hand up for everything. And so I said, yeah, I'll take that on, thinking that at the time it's just a matter of, you know, approving members and, you know, deleting spam posts and things like that.
Yep.
And then over time I kind of realised that it had this opportunity to become something more. And, you know, it really became, particularly during rollout phase, when, you know, so many new OTs were kind of coming into this MDI space of going, what do I do here? That there were lots of OTs that had already been working in that space that could kind of fill those gaps and really provide that guidance and advice. And it just became this really safe place to ask that question of. Yep.
It's a very kind, supportive group.
Yeah, that's right. What do I do? I don't know, you know, who this is, or I don't know what the process should be. Where do I go to for this information? And so many people willing to give that answer. So that's kind of where it evolved from. And obviously it's very different to where it first started now.
I think Facebook groups have had that trajectory right across industries, that they've had more maturity, there's more sophistication in the platform. You can do more things, be more helpful, be more friendly just by the functionality of the Facebook groups. How many are in there at the moment?
It's just over 8,000 members.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's become a real community of practice. It has really evolved. I think particularly during like COVID and lockdown, there's been a lot of support that was provided, you know, in your Victorian OTs, you know, telling off the New South Wales OTs and things like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, just sharing of experiences and really kind of, you know, outward support. I can remember at one point during the first lockdown going to Bunnings because there were OTs in that group who could not get safety glasses down in Melbourne. And seeing the post, me going to Bunnings, buying 10 safety glasses and posting it to OTs down there, purely on the basis of seeing that call out for help within the group, was something so basic, but obviously that they were in dire need of at that time. And I think that's what the group does. It really kind of allows that connection, regardless of the location and where people are, to really help one another out.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's kind of talk a little bit about the trainings that you do. Actually, before we do that, can we talk about Verve?
Yeah, sure.
The name, you know, like there is the champagne. We know that. Let's just get that on the record. Why Verve?
Well, it did actually originate from Verve. So as I said before, Verve OT was previously Verve Health Solutions. And when I set that first business up, I had two business partners, one in Australia and one in the UK that I'd worked with in a previous rehab life. And we'd kind of gone through, we'd done all this stuff for the accreditation and we're like, we really need a business name, you know, and we've got to have some champagne to celebrate. And one of them said, oh, we should have a glass of Verve. And I was like, oh, actually, that's a great idea. And we looked up the spelling of it and realized Verve is widow. So we're like, that's not going to work. And then when we looked up the definition of Verve, it means vitality and vibrancy. Mm. And I was like, oh, wow, that could actually work really well. And so when I didn't have to keep that name, but when it came to kind of establishing the NDIS business, the OT business, I thought, I really like that. It matches with what we're trying to do here in that I want to be different. We just want to do OT. I just want to, you know, get clients the best outcome and I want to do it in a way that's different to how everybody else is doing it. So a bit of vitality to it actually works really well.
Yep. It's also one of those words that feels great to say.
It does. Yeah. It's got buzz to it.
Yeah.
We've got a little catchphrase that we've been using, which is put a little verve in your life. And I'm like, yeah.
There you go. We'll get that as a quote.
Hey there. Okay. It's time for a breather. Did you know about our Allied Health Biz Quiz? This is not just any quiz. It's a roadmap to growth, tailored specifically for Allied Health business owners like you. Hundreds of business owners have taken our free quiz and received their own customized report. And if you have already, kudos to you. We hope you found it useful. But if you haven't yet, our free quiz takes less than 6 minutes to complete. It asks a series of questions based on our tried and trusted business accelerators. Think of the Allied Health Biz Quiz as a tool to measure where you're at, what's working, and how to build on what you already have. This quiz isn't about pointing out what's wrong with your business. It's about setting standards, measuring progress, and uncovering areas for improvement. Complete the Allied Health Biz Quiz today. You'll receive your own detailed customized report loaded with practical suggestions to help you get the best business brilliance outcomes. You can find the link in the show notes or on our website at naker.com.au. And now it's back to the conversation.
Running a business isn't just about setting up shop and becoming complacent. It's about showing up for ourselves and our clients with a commitment to continuous improvement. We have to be honest with ourselves about where we're at and where we're going. That means identifying strengths and weaknesses so we can improve. After all, if we're remaining stagnant, how can we scale and build the business and life of our dreams? That's where the NACAR Consulting Allied Health Biz Quiz comes in. We're not talking horoscopes and horoscopia. This questionnaire is the perfect starting point for you to begin identifying your strengths, needs, and blind spots as an allied health business owner. The process is simple. Answer the 14 questions and we'll send you a personalized report that includes actionable steps for you to start taking your business to the next level. Ready to take your business into your own hands? Take the NACAR Consulting Allied Health Biz Quiz today.
So, got the OTPs, got the Facebook group. Tell us about the training. What were your motivations there?
Well, the training came out of the OT group. So, I think I'd been managing the group for a couple of years. And really, as rollout was happening, well, moving into other states, really starting to notice a lot more posts from OTs where they're clearly out of their depths and not through any fault of their own, but simply because there was a lack of training and support out there. I think in the very early stages of the NDIS, you know, the agency themselves did run a lot of training for us, which was great, but then it kind of stopped. Yeah. And I think there was this assumption that, oh, you've all been trained, it's all fine, off you go. But it really wasn't the case. And a couple of myself and a couple of senior OTs kind of flagged it as a bit of an issue in terms of
huge risk.
Huge risk.
It doesn't set anyone up for success.
No, that's right. And it really felt that like our professional reputation was at risk.
Yeah.
Because the feeling was, if we don't know these basic things, if we don't understand how this scheme works, if we don't know how to submit these processes, etc., going to think of us, like, really? And so I ummed and ahed for ages about it. And then I thought, no, I know the NDIS. I'm going to put myself out there and say, I know the NDIS. If you want to come and learn the NDIS with me, let's do it. And that's kind of how it started. So the very first session that was run was called NDIS 101. It still runs now.
It's probably still relevant.
And it really was just a big deep dive into what is this thing? What is an insurance model? What does it mean? And how does that set the context for everything that we do? How do you read a plan? What do the goals mean? Who is a support coordinator? What are they supposed to do? It's really just to give the foundations for what are we doing in this space? And really then kind of led to a whole range of other topics.
Like 24 more.
Yeah, well, I think there's probably 30 now. It says,
oh, yeah? Wow.
Yeah. So, and I guess similar to when I started Verve OT, I realized I can't run all these topics. I mean, I could, it'd be great, but I don't have the time to do that. But I also recognize I'm not necessarily the expert. I know these things, but there might be another OT that's out there that knows them even better than I do. And so then I went out to look for those OTs. And I've now got this amazing team, I guess, of experienced OTs across the country who are those subject matter experts.
Yeah.
Topics like SDA or SIL or animal assistance therapy or assistance dogs or whatever it might be. And when I talked to them about why I wanted to set this up, they were totally on board because they recognized as well that we as a profession, we need to upskill. And we need to be really good. We need to get great outcomes. We need to deliver on what we said we're going to deliver. And the only way that's going to happen is if experienced OTs like us are willing to share our knowledge.
Yep.
And so initially I looked at it being like a supervision kind of program, but we've then kind of moved more into group training and it seems to work really well.
There's
opportunity to meet other OTs that are in the same position as you. Opportunity to be able to engage and interact within the sessions, to ask follow-up questions. But probably the biggest thing was that we wanted it to also be it has to be affordable, right?
And convenient and on-demand.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't want to wait 6 months to have to fly to somewhere and sit in a room for 3 days, and you need it now, hey?
That's right, yeah. So it has to be at your fingertips. It has to be available readily. And, yeah, it can't cost a fortune because I think one of the biggest issues is that often we're investing a lot of our own funding into our PD. You know, we might have the best employer out there in the world, but there's limitations on how much they can actually to pay for.
Yep.
So in making the sessions affordable, it meant that more OTs could access it regardless of where they were across the country.
It also gave you a platform with a lot of flexibility, because we all know that the NDIS changes from time to time, often with very little notice. And I guess with a talent bank like you've got, you can bring in people who are across that sooner rather than later, because I don't think the profession can wait for the peak bodies to pick up the trends and kind of bring the training in when people literally might have days to kind of get their head around the new thing.
Absolutely. We've had multiple occasions where the night before we have been updating the content because the NDIS dropped new guidelines the day before. That has been quite frustrating, but it's meant we've been able to respond really quickly.
Adaptability.
Ensure that new information is out to people as soon as they need it. So.
So let's kind of do a bit of a stock take. You've got a large team of OTs, they're all mobile, you've got a customer service team, you've got the Verb training, you've got the Facebook group, you've got a family, you've got the life stuff. Where does your focus go across a typical week? And I just, we'll be a little flexi and generous with typical. Where does your focus go across a week?
Look, everything is broken down into minute allotments for every task.
And for listeners, Sarah's just waving her hands around.
It's kind of Tetris puzzle, really, that everything has to fit together to make it work. And if one thing comes out, the whole thing falls apart. So I think it's finding that balance is really important. And obviously I think one thing that works well for me is I do work from home. So I'm not having to sit in traffic to go to an office or things like that. So I've got a bit more control about getting that work home life stuff happening at the same time. A lot of the focus, you know, is on the OT work. It's on the training and it's on the business, but I've also, I guess, outsourced as much as I can. So, I have admin that help with the training side, admin that help with the clinical side. I have a cleaner that comes in to help with my house.
Oh my gosh. It should be tax deductible.
It should be. I refuse to.
And it probably is.
Lining. Yep. So I have someone that comes to pick up his shirts to me because that's not my job to do. So, but I do also make sure they have time for myself. And so as I said, I've got lots of hustles that I have. But I also I'm very active physically. So I play netball a couple of times a week. And I also, this is quite funny, but I do like to share that I'm actually a world ranked high jumper at the moment. I'm actually ranked 6th in the world for high jump in the 40 to 44 years age group.
So many things I could say to that. Did not know that.
Yes. Having recently returned to athletics competition and competing at the master's level. And I do take quite pride in that because I never got that world ranking when I was in my teens. So, but I think it's important to be able to have those things for yourself that I don't have to live vicariously through my children anymore for their athletics competitions.
They go and watch mummy do
that's
sport.
That's right. They never want to though. But I do, I do enjoy kind of having those other outlets of away from work to put work to the side occasionally.
So let's look under the hood and get into some of the more businessy stuff. Do you enjoy the business side of it?
I do. And I think my biggest issue currently is that the clinical side still pulls me over.
It does.
I love getting those 300,000 approvals. So, but I, at the same time, I also love growing the business and knowing that there's more OTs to be able to help more of our clients. And sometimes, you know, being able to juggle those two things can be really hard.
Yeah. What have you learned from being a businesswoman?
I think I've learned that no day is ever the same, that no plan ever goes to perfection, that there'll be something. It doesn't matter how much you plan for things, something will come up. But if you can, you know, respond and change and adapt and be flexible, then it will all be okay in the end. So, but I think my key learnings have been that you get great satisfaction in having your own business. And having that control and being able to, I guess, be the change that you want to see in the world is something I've said before. And, you know, that we can all do great things, but there is a bit more flexibility about how great they might be if you're in charge. So,
yeah. And I what I tend to hear from, you know, coaching conversations and podcast conversations is that it takes a bit of time, you know, and there's this very sort of elegant and sometimes slow, sometimes fast way of changing your role and who you need to be in the business. And it makes sense you're a clinician in the early days. And then there's often a phase where you're more of the director. But some of the directors that I work with will actually always keep some clinical work or even return to some clinical work when they've got their leadership and executive team in place. So what, if you just pull out the crystal ball, what do you think your business is going to look like in 24 months?
Oh, I think in that time frame, I will have stepped more out of the clinical work. And what I would like to see happen is that gives me that opportunity to actually pass that clinical knowledge on to my OTs that work with me.
Yeah.
Because if it's all up here in my head, I'm the only one that can do it. So, and I'm only one person. There's only so many hours in the day. And there are so many clients out there at the moment. That are in real demand for services. So I think in that time frame, I will have kind of moved into more of that leadership director role and outside of that clinical. But I can still see that I'll be pulled back in every now and then. You know, there'll be a
little guest appearance.
A guest appearance.
Sarah Collison. Oh my gosh. Which part of business do you enjoy the most?
Look, I do probably enjoy the clinical side the most. But I also enjoy the training when I'm running it. Like if anyone's been to my training, I'll talk for hours. Like I ran a new session a few weeks ago about complex home mods and it went for 2 hours. By the time I got to the end of the 2 hours, my voice was hoarse. Like I could hardly be heard, but I could have kept talking for another hour. I do get really passionate when I'm talking about training topics that I have. And I think it's just because I have got so much to share and I'm really happy to share it. Like I often get calls or messages from people that say, oh, you know, thank you so much for what you do. And I'm like, yeah, like, you know, I don't feel the need to be thanked for it. Like I actually do it because I just am happy to do it. But it's nice to know that it makes a difference for people. So,
I
think it comes back to that wanting to feel valued and having that contribution that you make be valued as well. And I think that's something that I had always sought whenever I was working for another organization. I sometimes didn't get that. And I think when you don't get that, it's something that is intrinsically important at the end of the day.
Are there any other kind of trends, for want of a better word, that you've noticed about the workforce the last couple of years? You know, we've got the NDIS rolling out. We've had the pandemic. You're in Metro Sydney. What have you noticed about the workforce, about all those wonderful OTs out there?
They're just going somewhere, and I don't know where they're going, but I think they're going somewhere.
That's just broad.
Very broad, I know. But I often will say this when I get referrers calling and say, we can't find anyone, everyone's got waiting lists. I'm like, yeah, I know. I know that the OTs are out there somewhere. I don't know where they're going. I don't know where they've gone.
Where do you think they are? What's your guess?
I worry that some are leaving the profession because it's hard. And I worry that some are leaving the NDIS because it's hard. And I get it. Like, it is hard. And it's hard to sustain yourself in a role which is so complex. And there are so many other complex factors or people that you've got to deal with. I think as OTs, we're female heavy, right? We're mostly female. We probably work for a good 10 years full time. Then we go off and we have kids. So we have these big breaks of maternity leave. And there's probably some of us that come back full time, but a lot of us come back part time. So it's almost like our capacity thins out as we kind of get older. And certainly that's what I've found is like a lot of the OTs that work for Verve are those OTs that are mums, their families, they've got lots of demands on their time and they can't work full time. They are part time or they're subcontracting here and there. And I think that from our profession, we just don't have these full timers that are available. I think that certainly every kind of possible setting that OTs could work in is experiencing the same though. Like rehab has always had issues with trying to recruit OTs. The hospitals are still having issues with recruiting OTs, and I don't feel like that was there kind of, you know, 8 to 10 years ago. No,
it wasn't.
Yeah. So, it's hard to know, you know, as I said, I don't know where they've all gone suddenly. I feel like more recently it's been this last 6 to 9 months that it's become more difficult, but it could just be that I've tapped out all the networks that I had. So.
Run out of OT friends.
Right.
So. You're having some success with recruitment though.
Yeah, look, I am actually. So, and I think, again, it's because we've got an offering that's a bit different, you know. We work from home. You've got that flexibility of not having to go into an office or a hospital. You know, the cost of living, you know, paying for petrol to drive to and from work is not ideal. But I guess on the flip side, it does mean that a lot of the OTs we attract are not full-timers either. You know, they are part-time. They are mums that need some more flexibility, which, you know, we're happy to offer. But it does mean that, you know, they fill up pretty quickly. You know, we just had a new OT come on board 2 weeks ago and she's already booked out until the end of September, which is a great problem to have.
Love a quality problem.
You know, it just means that you're still, it just feels like you're constantly recruiting. You know, I'm reviewing our website at the moment to kind of update our you know, work with us page. And, you know, I feel like that CCAD, it's like it's just being refreshed every month because, you know, and then, you know, I have had the situation where I was interviewing an OT and they're like, oh, have you got a lot of turnover because you constantly got a vacancy advertised? And I said, no, it's the opposite. Like, I don't have OTs leaving, but I'm getting constant referrals that I need to keep recruiting because they're filling up their capacity so quickly. Yep. So kind of, you know, that perception of what people might think is happening is actually the opposite. It's you know, we're just at capacity so fast that we can't keep up with the demand. And, you know, I still maintain even to this point that if I do have to turn a referral away, I'll try and give that person a lead. But I feel like my lead might be giving them a dead end because I don't think those people have got either. So it's really tricky. And I've got a colleague who's a physio who has a practice in Sydney. A couple of weeks ago I sent a client to her and then the next day she came back to me asking about the same client. And I said, no, I sent it to you. She said, I'm like, can't help. So, and I think that's probably something I'm seeing a bit more of here in Sydney too, though, is that there is that networking. There is that, hey, client, I can't help. Or can you help with this? Or, you know, we do a lot of complex home mods and some of the big kind of organisations near us don't do it. So they send those to us and we send a lot of the complex seating to them because we don't have a complex seating OT at the moment. So, and I actually think that's really great that we're not in competition.
Good collaboration. Yeah,
absolutely. Because at the end of the day, the client needs to be seen. Doesn't matter who they see, they need to be seen by someone. You know, don't hold on to them promising that you might recruit an OT in 3 months' time, because if you don't, that's 3 months wasted for that client.
Yeah, so, on top of all the other waiting they've got ahead of them.
Exactly, So I think having those partnerships and networks and just being really open with each other and going, you could help me and I can help you, and there's no money or commission exchange. It's just what we do. And it works really well, so.
Yeah. So whilst you've had leadership experience in previous roles, what's it like leading your own team in your own business?
Oh, there's a lot more pressure.
Yeah, what's that about?
I think that there's that responsibility of knowing that you are the provider of the income that they receive. But I think this is really highlighted during the second COVID lockdown, because in the first COVID lockdown, I only had subcontractors. I didn't have employees. And so when all of those referrals kind of dried up and all the appointments had to be cancelled and we all moved to telehealth, we had a huge loss of, you know, I think it was 30 to 40% drop in income. And that was income for those subcontractors. And at the time, you know, everybody was in the same boat. It was very easy to say, look, I can't do anything. Like, this is what it is. And this is why you're a subcontractor, that you know that this is something that will happen. But what happened in the second lockdown is I then had these employees that I still had to pay. And I was like, okay. And then I had these subcontractors where I had to kind of go, well, I really need to give those referrals to my employees and not you, the subcontractor.
Ooh, leadership and moment.
It was. Yeah. And I remember having a really kind of, you know, conversation with one of those subcontractors. He said, I really need those referrals and I need more work to be coming through. And I'm like, I get that, but you're a subcontractor. That's the nature of this arrangement that we have. And I've got six employees sitting over here that I have to pay regardless of what work they do. And they need to be my priority. So it was kind of a bit of a moment of, wow, this is really serious right now. And it felt much more serious than what it had before.
Yeah.
Not that I was making light of it before, but just I felt such a bigger responsibility.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I just felt what was really important for me as a leader was to reassure those employees that we're going to get through this. It doesn't matter what happens with appointments, referrals. There's other things that you can do. Don't worry about the billing. Everyone will get paid and we will get through this and it will work out. Mm. And I've kind of already had a bit of a war chest or a slush fund set aside, you know, in the event of emergency.
Yep. Love a war chest.
And that I'll always have that now because
yep, it absolutely.
Was really stressful. And, you know, I can remember actually because I've got some really good friends from uni who are OTs and we would always do these Zoom catch-ups during lockdown. I can remember sitting here at my desk crying in one of those because I just felt under such pressure to make these decisions and having no one to go to because it was just me as the director. I didn't have a clinical services manager at that time, but I had all these people relying on me and it was really stressful.
Yeah.
And then one of them, you know, rang the next day and said, let's talk it over. Like what if I was your manager, what would you get me to do or what could I help you with? And I was like, oh, okay, this is good. I should have thought to reach out to someone. But, you know, it can be very lonely when you're the only kind of leader in your team. So.
Yep. And the buck starts and stops.
It does.
With you to a large extent.
Yeah. So, and sometimes you've got to make, you know, difficult decisions and sometimes you'll question or second guess yourself. And
sometimes you won't even get it right.
No, that's right. I can look back over my career and see plenty of times where I would redo a conversation I've had with someone or a situation that occurred or there was a miscommunication or whatever it might be. But I think you just learn from those things. I've had to terminate people in the past. It's never nice, but it's not personal. And, you know, sticking to the facts, being aware of what the obligations are, being aware of how that person will be feeling and you know, considering respectful of that. But, yeah, it's hard. It's hard. It's not an easy thing.
Got a couple more minutes. You can kind of have the talking stick for the last piece. What would you like other business owners to think about?
Actually, I've got a big one.
Okay, I'll pin my ears back. Go for it.
Look, one of the things that we see a lot of, or we have been seeing a lot of in the OT providers group over the last 6 to 12 months, I guess is the lack of support for new grads. And it's something that I'm quite passionate about. But I'm passionate about, I guess, in a different way because at Verve, I would never take on a new grad. And the reason for that is that I don't feel like when you've got a mobile service and you don't have an office or a clinic, that you can necessarily provide them with the right kind of support. At least in this point in time, I don't feel that I can. But what worries me is when we see these posts from new grads that are really struggling and they're saying things like, you know, I've been given this complex home mods referral, but I don't have any training in complex home mods. Or I've been asked to do this, but there's no other OT in my organization to actually supervise me. And, you know, when you dig a little deeper, you find out that these new grads have kind of been promised the world. And then they turn up and they start work and they really don't have the support they need. And, you know, it's not just about not having an OT there, but not even having access to an OT. I interviewed someone last month and they told me that their OT supervisor was based in New Zealand and that if they needed to get access to them, they could only do so via email. And for someone who's 6 months out, I just don't think that's appropriate at all.
No.
And so my big message to business owners is that, like, I get it. New grads, they're cheap. You can mold them. You can train them up. You can, you know, really kind of make money off them. That's wonderful for you. but please don't do the wrong thing by them. Like, you actually have to train and support them. You have to nurture them. They're fresh out of uni, 4 years. You know, some of the placements that they may have done, you know, may or may not be suitable to the kind of area of practice that they've now gone into. But you actually need to invest in them. You know, it is an investment you're making. If you want to get that big return, you need to invest in them. And it's not hard to send them on training or to give them on-the-job training, to have programs in place for upskilling. And there are some great organizations out there that do it. Some of those big providers, because I've taken OTs on from those providers and they're fantastic. But there are these, I guess, other businesses out there that are really not doing the right thing. And I just really encourage them to think about that new grad experience. And because I think potentially it's one of the things that's leading to this dropout of the profession.
Yeah.
They start in these roles, they're completely burnt out, they're not supported, and then they just walk away because it's too hard. And it really shouldn't be the case.
Yeah. Oh, couldn't agree more. It's more than an investment in their first 2 years. It's really an investment in their 30 years.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. And look, as I said, I'm always very much about I want to give to the profession. And so whilst we don't have new grads, we have taken on students. And even with our students, like we've taken them on like a complex home mods placement, I've sent them to the OTA course while they're on placement. I have paid the $750 for that student to go on that placement because it's my opportunity to help invest in that new grad to benefit some other client or some other organisation.
Down the track.
And I'm really happy to make that investment because I still get something from them while they're there on placement as well.
Mm.
You know, they help with billing, they do some drawings, they develop resources. You know, I'm getting something out of it too. But I think it's important that we recognise that that investment is going to pay off in the longer term for the profession.
Right. Completely agree. Love it. Love it. Thank you so much for coming in, Sarah, and sharing where it's all up to now.
Oh, no, very happy to. I love having a chat. I love talking about this kind of stuff. So, very much for the opportunity. I have to say, because I listened to Chantel's podcast this week, and I was like, I'm not sure if I can follow Chantel. So she's amazing. but thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. For the show notes and other resources, our webinar replays, they're all available over on naker.com.au. And if you're loving what you're listening to, please subscribe. We don't want you to miss out on a single thing. And if you want others to get the same benefit that you've had from listening into these episodes, please share this episode and any of the others forward to any of your other allied health business colleagues. And we are totally here for you. Don't forget for a moment that you can jump on in and book that power call, and we can see how we can help you get the best of business done. Looking forward to seeing you there.